We're continuing.
Okay. Three of my friends also met their future wives at the same time. And it was a coincidence that my wife told me that whenever she was planning to go somewhere for the summer, her friend and she had a conversation, and her friend asked her, where are you going? She says, I have no place that I'm thinking of. And her friend suggested that she go to the camp. She says, there's a lot of boys who are going to go up there. And she says, oh, no. Well, she eventually did go there. So it is, the irony is that we both met. And my brother my older brother was also there as a member. And he tried to push us together. She was very wonderful. Person.
What was your wife's first and maiden name?
Magalansky. Her name was Edith Magalansky. And then they changed the name to Madeline.
I see.
And she was born in this. She was born in Mickey's Rocks. I'm not sure.
Can you tell us the year that she was born?
1913.
I see. What was her background? Where did her parents come from?
Her parents also came from Lithuania, and he was a tailor. And they settled in Mickey's Rocks, and she graduated high school, and whenever I met her, she was working for the State Department of Employment.
I see. How many siblings did she have?
Okay, she had two sisters and a brother.
Can you tell us their names?
Oh, yes. The oldest was Martha. The next one was Celia. The next one was Edith, and the last one was Lou, L-O-U.
Let me see.
They're all gone.
I see. Can you describe to us the day you proposed to your wife?
Yes.
How did it happen? How did this
It was very early. My brother invited us to a little get-together at his home. So, and he says, don't forget to bring Edith. Well, okay. So, I brought Edith, and we were a little early, and every time the doorbell rang, and some of the visitors came, friends over there, we would greet them and all that, and everything like that. And every time that people would come in, they would say, congratulations. And somehow or other, a funny thing happened to me. I went and I ran over to Edith, and I says to her, when are we going to get married? She looked at me, she says, is this a proposal? I says, yes, this is a proposal. Immediately, the rest of the family who were there, the friends and what have you over there, they took it up, and then she called up her sister, to inform her sister, and that was it.
And how long after the proposal, the two of you got married?
Within about a half a year or a year. And then we were married by Rabbi Lichter at the B'nai Israel.
I see. Can you describe us, tell us about your wedding?
The wedding, we had that in the chapel. We didn't have a wedding. We didn't use the big shul. We held it in the afternoon at the chapel, and we had just the friends over and the family. And my dad was the best man.
Who was the maid of honor?
The maid of honor? I think, I'm not sure, but I think it was her sister Celia. They were very close.
I see. Does your wife come from a traditional family too?
Yes.
I see. So it was a very, was it a traditional Jewish wedding?
Correct.
I see.
Correct. In every respect.
See, how long, how many years you...
Very lovely.
How many years you have been married?
1948 in 48 and she died in 80.
I see. Okay. And how many children do you have?
Just one.
Just one son?
Ira Yisrael.
Ira Yisrael.
Named after his grandfather.
Oh, I see. What does your son do?
My son was a former dentist, and he had to give up his practice because he was unable to use his right arm any longer. And he got on with the University of California, SD, that's in San Diego, he's been with them now for 3-4 years.
And when you got married, did you live in the same area or did you move?
Yes. Whenever it was interesting, whenever we were married, we rented a place on Stanton Avenue. So one day, Edith says to me, says, "What do you say we think of buying a home?" And I says, "I'm with you 1,000%. So the first place that we went to make inquiry was on Forbes Street.
What part of Forbes?
Between Murray and Whiteman. It's right next door to that barber shop, to that beauty parlor, exactly next door.
What section of the city is that?
It's Royal Hill. And so we went up, we took a look at it, and we called my dad. Dad had terminal cancer at the time, and he lived on Whiteman Street. And he was already retired, of course. And he immediately came over. And whenever he came over, he walked up the steps. It was rough. And he sat down, and the lady of the house who was selling the house over there says, "I'll show you the place." He says, "By all means." She says, "Where do you want to go first?" So he says, "Let's go down into the basement." So he went down the basement, and he looked around the place. He saw everything. And then afterwards he walked upstairs. Then he clumped down on the sofa. And so he stayed there for a moment, and he started to talk to her. He says, "I like this place." But she says, "You haven't seen the upstairs. You haven't seen the rest of the place." He says, "I'm too tired and fatigued to do that." He says, "Come on, I'll show you the upstairs." So we went up to the second floor of the bedrooms, and then afterwards we went down again. And no, before we went down, she said, "Now I want to show you the third floor that I had fixed up." He said, "I can't do it." Just finally, she influenced him to go up there. Finally, we got down to the sofa. So after a little bit of a while, he says, "Let's talk about this place." And here, in the meantime, Edith and I were looking at each other. We hadn't said a word. We didn't know what was in his mind. All that he said was, these young people, he called us young people. He says, these young people would love to have this, would like to have a home, and this is satisfactory. So finally, within about a half an hour, three-quarters of an hour at the most, they agreed on a price. Just like that. The first place that we had looked at and everything. So Dad looked at me and he says, "Myra, you got a house." So he says to me, "Yeah, do you have enough money for hand down money?" And I says, "Yes, I do." He says, "Do you have a blank check?" And I says, "No, I don't have any with me. I wasn't anticipating this over here." So he happened to have a blank check in his pocket. In those days, the blank check had a name on it, the name of the bank. But if you needed it, you were able to scratch out the name, believe it or not. You would never believe it. That's what was the practice at that time. You'd scratch it out and you put down the name of your bank. And that's exactly what he did. He said, "What bank do you deal with?" And I told him. And then he had to have, and he gave this lady the blank check. And that was how we bought the house.
And how long have you lived in that house?
We lived in that house whenever it came to school, Ira went to school in Squirrel Hill, and one day Edith says to me, she says, "You know, there aren't enough boys around here for Ira to play with."
What was the name of the school that he went to, Bud?
Right behind Wilkins Avenue on, there was a school building. It's now being used by a social service outfit. Right behind Soudini's.
Whiteman School?
Whiteman School. Yeah, it was Whiteman School. So she says, Ira does not have enough children, boys to play with. So I agreed with her. And she says, "Well, then let's look around for another place." So she said, "How about going to East End?" So that was how we found a home in East End, and that's where we moved to King Avenue.
What was the year that she moved second time?
It was about 1900 about 1950. He was still going to grade school.
Can you tell me about your sons being in school?
Yes.
Was the year that he was born?
He was born in 1950. He went to Peabody High School from the Fulton School, and then from there he went over to Pitt. And all during that particular time he was working in a drugstore. And then whenever he graduated from Pitt, he wanted to take up dentistry, and he went to Temple University. And then from Temple University, after he got his degree, he went to practice in New Haven, in Pitt, because he had been working up there during the summertime, and he was very much impressed by the Jewish community up there. He made a lot of friends as a camp counselor. So that's how we happened to get up there.
In your son's younger years, did he go to Sunday school or to a religious school?
Yes.
Which one? Where?
He went to let me see which one it was. I'm not sure, but I think it was the Beth Shul. And then he also belonged to the AZA.
What is AZA?
AZA is Aleph Tzedek Aleph. That's from the B'nai B'rith for the young people. It's a group. It's an organization. In fact, this fellow Garrick, whose name I showed you on the calendar over here, he was their leader.
I see. So was your son active in other organizations?
No, but he was active. He was active in the ACA.
I see. That was his main basic activity.
That's right.
I see. Can you describe to us your family life, with your wife and your son? What kind of a life did you lead?
Or did you have? The typical Jewish family life. We were all very close with our relatives. We used to have a Rubenstein family circle, which was a cousins group, and we used to have monthly meetings, and they were delightful. That brought all of the kids together, with their parents, with their relatives, and with their cousins and what have you. That was a wonderful experience.
I wanted to ask you, is how often did you and the rest of your family, your brothers and sisters, got together?
We got together every month, but then on certain holidays, we used to have picnics We used to have a lot of fairs together, and then we even went so far as to buy a bunch of lots together over the Adachishur.
Over where?
In the cemetery.
I see.
Adachishur.
I see.
That's right. That's where we're all settling right now.
Are the rest of your siblings, they were settled here in Pittsburgh?
Correct.
What happened to them? What did they do in their life, if you can tell us?
My sister.
Can you give us her name again?
Ida. Ida, my sister, became a bookkeeper, and then she eventually married her boss. and then my brother Hyman, became a contractor, and he was quite successful. And then my brother Abe got into graduated from college, and he got in with his father-in-law Nathan Builder, who had a feed supply on Crawford Street. And then they eventually got into the building supply business, because my brother knew a lot of contractors and what have you. In those days, there were a lot of small contractors. And then he eventually married his daughter's his boss's daughter, Fanny Builder. And then after Abe was my brother Morris. And he went to Carnegie Tech into the architectural school, and he became an architect. And then my dad wanted me to be a lawyer, and it did not turn out that way, regrettably.
What can you tell us about your parents? How do you remember your parents?
Stiller, quiet demeanor. My mother was very, very friendly and very gracious and without a fault. She got along very well with everybody. We had German neighbors on both sides of us over there, and mother used to talk to them in Yiddish, and they would talk to her in German. Somehow or other, it wasn't so much the words as their actions that they understood each other. But she was very, very, very friendly with everyone. Very friendly.
What kind of...
Gracious. Gracious one.
What kind of interest did she have in addition to the family? What kind of things she enjoyed doing?
Very little. The family was her life. Her children were her life.
Was your father involved in any volunteer or charitable organizations, Jewish organizations?
He was interested in his synagogue. No, not too active, but because of his business that was dependent on having a lot of friends and being known, he was well known, and he had a lot of friends.
Because you were Jewish, how did your father's business associates relate to him as a Jew? Was there any problem with that?
No problem whatsoever. No problem.
I see.
He did business with a lot of Gentiles and with Jewish people. And in fact, one time, one of the merchants on Fifth Avenue approached Dad. This was years ago. And he says, Mr. Parker, Mr. Parker, you being a contractor, I would like to have you come with me to Palestine. That was when it was Palestine. Years ago, he says, let us build some homes, let us build some things over there. And so Dad came home and he spoke to Mother, The mother said, what are we going to do with five children? It says, let's hold up on that. So Dad never went.
Since we're talking about the Jewish environment here, did you yourself or anybody around you experience any anti-Semitism in your family circle?
No.
I see.
No. Emphatically, no.
I see. Okay. You have said before that your family did not participate in any communal affairs or did
No.
They?
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
Can you tell us where were you during the World War One?
Yeah. World War One, I was fairly young at the time. World War One was 1918, I was born in 1907, so therefore. But I do remember my two brothers were in the ROTC, that's in the Reserve Officers Training Camp. One of them was over at the Duquesne Gardens, that's where the Park Plaza is, and the other one was over at the University of Pittsburgh, way up there where the Veterans Hospital is. They were stationed up there, and then for weekends they used to come back home to visit with us, of course. We weren't very, very far away. They did not, the war was over by the time that they were ready to go. They were students. It was a special program for students. I was of age for the Second War, and I served. And I served over in the Pacific Ocean.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. I was in for 3.5 years.
Can you tell us a little bit about it, how you were taken to the service?
It was a tremendous experience, a wonderful experience. I met fellows from all over the country.
What was the year that you were drafted?
1942. I went into the service. I enlisted because I knew that I was going to be drafted. I was of the proper age. I was single at the time. And I wanted to get into the construction battalion because of my background. And I was accepted as such. And then in a short while, in about 2, 3, 4 weeks, we were shipped out of the country. I went over to Dutch Harbor.
Where?
Dutch Harbor in Alaska. Off Alaska. That's in a chain of islands. I met fellows from all over. What an experience. Fortunately, I was fortunate, in being with them and seeing a lot of fellows. And those whom I didn't like, I kept away from, which is only natural. I was already a grown-up fella, so therefore, but I had a lot of friends, and I'm still in touch with them.
Are you a member of the Veterans Association?
Yes, I belong to the 8th Battalion, which is an organization of the battalion that I joined up. In fact, I get their newsletter.
Were there a lot of...
There's only a handful left.
I see. Were there a lot of Jewish soldiers at your time who...
No. There were only a small number of them. You know, it was a funny thing. Whenever we went over to Dutch Harbor, we weren't permitted to leave any lights on anywhere, not even a match or something like that. We had a doctor. He was a Jewish fellow, and whenever we started to come up there, there were a few more Jewish fellows that came up there. He decided, let's have a get together for the Sabbath, and have some religious services. And here he was an obstetrician, and here he became our doctor. So that was the experience as far as that goes. Then I had a wonderful experience. I don't know what I don't know what holiday it was. We were already on board a ship to go over to Japan. We were going to strike and attack Japan. So the Christian chaplain aboard the ship, he found out about me. He called me over and he says, "We're going to have Jewish services here, Parker. How do you like it? How do you like the idea?" I says, "I think it's wonderful." He says, "Well, and how would you like to conduct it?" At that particular time, I was the oldest of all of the Jewish boys that were around. There were just a handful of them. So whenever it came to the holiday, they put us on a gun turret.
Put you where?
In a gun turret. That's one of those round, where the gun is. Guns are. And I got a hold of a little prayer book, and I put where certain paragraphs are to be read, and I decided to give a certain paragraph to each one of the fellows. I didn't know who the fellows were. Oh yeah, there was one fellow, but I know two fellows were here. And so we had that particular service, and that memory I will never forget. Out there on the ocean with the setting sun. And,
which ocean was that?
The Pacific. I never went over on the Atlantic. And and that was remarkable. That was a wonderful, wonderful experience. I hope I shall never forget it.
Were you in any combat or in action with the Japanese? Or?
No.
You said you...
No, what we did was to build up the place that was attacked by the Japanese before. In other words, the Dutch harbor, it was attacked by them. And whenever we came in, we fixed up the airfield, barracks, and what have you. And I stayed pretty close to there for about 11 months. Then I went back again for reassignment to the States. And then they sent us back again to Hawaii. It was quite nice.
What was the year that you were in Hawaii?
In Hawaii, I was there about 1943-44.
So you were not there during the... Were you there during the harbor?
Oh, yes. That was shortly after Dutch Harbor was attacked. I had seen the damage that had been done.
Can you describe what you have seen?
Well, at Hickam Field, where they attacked our airplanes, you could see the bullet holes in the walls. See, by that particular time, they had already cleaned off and taken away all of the damaged buildings and airplanes and what have you. That I had seen. Then I used to see some of the warships that would come in. From battle, come into the harbor there that I had seen, and that was quite awesome.
Okay, but do you remember your feeling, what you felt when you saw this destruction?
No, I had no feeling at all. I felt well. Here's a thing that's indicative of warfare, of people being killed, and all of that. No, I looked at it as an experience that I would never experience in any other way. No.
Let me see. We were talking about the World War II, but if we can go a little bit backwards to the times of depression.
Yeah.
Can you tell us if you have any memories of times of depression?
I don't have too much. Dad was a good provider. And so therefore I wasn't we weren't affected too much by the depression.
Have you seen any of your friends or associates that experienced suffering during the depression?
I knew some of them were there, but I can't describe who they were, mm-hmm. And because a lot of the boys that I knew came from poor families, wonderful boys. Some of them became judges, some of them became doctors, and wonderful boys. Mm-hmm.
Going to World War II, can you tell us how much have you learned or heard what was happening or what was occurring in Europe during the Holocaust?
No. You know, it's a funny thing. We didn't, either I didn't read the proper news, or the news wasn't given to us, period. We didn't.